Hey, everybody. Welcome to Making Waves Podcast with me, Tom Prather. My guest today for episode 003 is nationally known wellness expert, Dr. Brian Paris. As the developer of the renowned Advanced Wellness Systems Program, Dr. Paris, Brian as I call him, has worked with thousands of patients with diverse medical histories to put them on a pain-free path. Now, I think the important part of that is oftentimes without surgery. That is always the goal. Brian has been a featured speaker at TEDx and is a regular on television news programming, providing his highly respected insight. So in this episode, Brian discussed how he became the renegade of the chiropractic world, his philosophy that the first step of fixing pain is listening to your own inner dialogue, and hit topics such as the revolutionary treatment of stem cell therapy, the importance of sleep for overall health, and how to combat procrastination. Quite honestly, we discussed a bunch of other tips that will improve your life, hopefully. I'm thrilled to have Brian on because I talk to so many people that are dealing with back pain, knee pain, neck pain. And I wanted to provide a platform to let those people know that there are, in fact, ways to get better. But I should mention as a disclaimer, to cover my butt, however, this podcast is not intended to be used as medical diagnosis nor medical advice and or treatment. If you have pain or in pain, give Dr. Brian a call or his office, or for that matter, a doctor located near you. All right, so sit back, relax, unless you're driving. In that case, as always, keep your eyes on the road and please enjoy our conversation. Brian, how you doing?
I'm great, man.
I see you all the time at the gym.
Yes, you do. In the pool.
In the pool. We see each other in the pool.
Yes, we do.
I'm trying to get my duck wings in, or my duck, whatever that is. I'm doing okay. What do you do in the pool?
Swim.
Touche.
Yes, touche.
Like, what's your regimen on that?
I don't really do distance per se. I'll do sprint work, and really what I'm working to convince the general manager of Lifetime is that I can start using sandbags underwater and do...
I had talked to somebody about that myself.
Yeah. And I had a friend who had a house. He sold it, 12-foot saltwater pool, so we were doing a lot of explosive work off the bottom of the pool.
Yeah.
A la Laird Hamilton, mm-hmm. Gabby Reese. So I just adopted what I've seen from them and started doing it on my own in his pool, but he sold his house. So now I'm looking for a pool. Okay. So any of you listeners out there who want to train and you live in the DC area, let's get it on.
We should get a sponsorship from Lifetime out of this.
I would like that. Yes. They were concerned about ruining the pool, but I gotta.
So I had talked to them about nothing official, of course, but, they have those upstairs on the second level. Not that anyone knows what we're talking about, but, the dumbbells, the rubber dumbbells, mm-hmm. with the metal
handles.
The handles.
Yes, that's what I've used underwater.
Yeah.
However, you know, you're dealing with a $1 billion corporation that gets concerned with ruining pools. I have a 50-pound sandbag in my car right now that I'm waiting to walk into Lifetime with. So I got to find the time to talk to Ken. So Ken, if you're listening,
Ken, hook us up, brother. Man.
Come on, we got to stay lean and young.
All right, rapid fire questions.
Yes, sir.
Dogs or cats?
I have a cat. I love dogs and do not want the responsibility of a dog right now.
Cats, they do their own thing.
Yeah, he kind of writes poetry, hangs out.
Writes poetry.
Does yoga. Guy. He's cool.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars.
Rolling Stones or the Beatles?
Beatles.
Really?
Yeah.
Explain that.
Just the old schoolness of them and the origination and, you know, where they... You know, I just never got into the Stones when I was younger, but okay. Beatles I picked up.
I'm still on the fence.
It is a tough question, though.
I think I'm a Stones guy, more of a rock and roller.
It's interesting. I just, the Beatles have such an influence on so many genres of music, too.
I think I know the answer to this, which isn't going to be either of the answers, but Coke or Pepsi.
Neither, dude.
Yes,
yeah. I don't drink sugar.
Beach or mountains?
Holy, that's not fair because I surf and ski, so both. Half and half.
All right. PC or Mac?
PC.
PC?
Yeah. I thought you meant politically correct.
Nah.
The answer is no.
East or West Coast?
West, and I'm on the East.
It's a whole cat-dog thing.
It is, yeah. It's a dichotomy.
Kramer or Costanza?
Kramer.
Okay. Superman, Batman?
Whoa. Batman. The Dark Knight.
This is one that I don't even know if you have an opinion on this. Kardashians, Osbournes.
Osbournes, for
crazy
sure.
Crazy reality.
No, it's the Kardashians don't do it for me.
All right.
I dig the Osbournes.
So, now we'll go to the interview.
Okay.
You and I met years ago.
Yes.
I was introduced to you as, not me, but you, being a chiropractor.
Yes, sir.
We'll get into that later, what that means, what you are now in relation to that practice. But let's start from the beginning. Tell me about your family. You grew up in New Jersey.
Grew up in New Jersey in a blue-collar kind of town, and I had a good family life. I'm the youngest of two brothers. All three of us are physicians, two chiropractors, one is a surgeon, and my mother was a office manager, collections officer, owner of a family business, like a part owner, and my father was a patent attorney for Exxon. And both very into education and, you know, dedicated that portion of my childhood to raising us.
Is that why you were in New Jersey? Because isn't Exxon up there?
A portion of it, yeah. Okay. And my parents both grew up there, so they never ventured too far.
Okay.
Just moved to little nicer areas.
What part of Jersey?
Clark. It's in Union County, New Jersey.
Okay.
It's like, but it's in a very squished area. However, you know, I'm still connected with a lot of my friends. I had a really awesome group of friends who are now very successful, and all of us are self-motivated, driven, and we still support each other in a lot of different venues and business and just fun in life.
So they say there's something in the water in New Jersey.
For sure.
With pizza, sandwiches, dough, bread.
And
success, evidently.
Mindset, success, yeah. And it also wears the sleeves away from typical t-shirts.
All right, so is it in high school you became an all-star? Not all-star.
All-state?
All-state lacrosse player.
High school, yes. I was an all-state lacrosse player, yep.
Do you have any injuries back then?
Yeah. I hurt my low back. But even earlier, which is how I got introduced to chiropractic, I like early in my life, I started playing tackle football probably like third or fourth grade, I think.
Okay.
And you know, that was a huge impact in my life for leadership and determination, discipline, and, you know, just feeling what success felt like from an athletic perspective. You know, and the way we learned how to hit in football was with our heads first.
Right.
And I got a lot of stingers and I injured my neck and went to the chiropractor. That was the first exposure that I had to that.
When you say stingers, mm-hmm. It's interesting what they're called, like your bell rung.
Yeah.
What they used to say in our day, it's now a concussion we're finding.
Well, stinger is actually a specific injury where you hit someone in the head, gets a lateral flexion to it, so you get it could be a nerve injury or just muscular injury that goes down into the arm. So, you know, concussions started even earlier than that in my days from fights with my brother, and, you know, it's that whole genre.
What the heck did he do to you?
I don't remember clearly, but he was 6 years older than me, and hopefully he's listening to this. My dad kicked his butt after. But
Remember because you were six, or not remember because he concussed you?
I think it's a combination because I guess he wanted to show me what it felt like to be punched in the face with some gloves. So he hit me, and then I went back, and my head hit the floor, and I was out. Yeah, so I think that was the start.
These things happen.
Yeah, when you have older brothers. So,
you mentioned, did your injury lead you to be interested in like body mechanics?
Multitude of injuries led me in that direction. And then also even earlier, not just an injury, I think like in fourth, fifth grade, I was getting bronchitis six, seven times a year, just always sick, coughing, and like I could spell erythromycin backwards because I grew up on that stuff. And my parents were just up in arms. They didn't know what to do. And they brought me finally to an allergist, and I found out I was allergic to cow's milk.
Really?
Yeah. So I stopped drinking cow's milk and I stopped getting sick.
So was that lactose intolerant?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And you can have a milk allergy or a milk sugar allergy, milk protein allergy. You know, there's a lot of science behind that. And I think I'm more allergic to the sugar aspect that's inside milk and other things. I'm sensitive to gluten also. And I look at it all as a gift. Yet back then, when I was addicted to sugar and all I ate was cereal three times a day and had no milk to use in my cereal before they came out with all these other products, even lactate didn't have. Mm-hmm. So I was drinking like non-dairy creamer in three bowls of cereal a day and wondering why I was overweight and hyper.
So when you say you're sensitive to gluten,
yeah,
what is the difference between being sensitive and being allergic?
Well, you can, I mean, it goes as far as celiac disease where, I mean, it can kill you or cause some very, very severe problems.
Okay.
Or you can get the underlying, like, subclinical problems like malaise, fatigue, bloating, brain fog, you know, and as we dive into this conversation further, you know, people are always asking me, like, how do you stay young or what do you do to keep youthful and how do you deal with injuries? And I think nutrition is the hugest component and it really boils down to how responsible and disciplined can you be about your own self and what goes in your mouth. You know, and I think that's a huge piece of aging well.
Yeah.
Nutrition.
I'll tell you, ever since I was a kid, I would get strep throat 4 or 5 times a year. I was raised with nasal and congestive issues and stuff like that. And they didn't know what to do back then. And then my daughter was having headaches all the time. So the doctor recommended getting her allergies tested. And to, as a show of solidarity, because she was frightened by it, I said, you know what? I've been putting that off all my life. I'll do it with you. And neither of us, $2,000 later, were allergic to a thing.
Interesting.
But they said that we may be sensitive to certain things.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those tests, they only test you at the end stage. It's really like the subclinical, the things, you know, it's like when someone's pre-diabetic, right? I can really look at people now because I've been in this business and industry for so long that even though they say they're not diabetic, I'm like, you're like 3 donuts away from mm-hmm. becoming diabetic. So, sorry, I cut you off.
Do you see that in me, Brian?
No.
Okay, good.
No, because thanks. You're in the pool with me.
Well, I'll tell you, I was listening to, we were talking about Tim Ferriss earlier. I'm sorry, she's been on there as well, but Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And there was a doctor there, Rhonda Patrick, I believe her name is, and they were talking about vitamin D. And I originally heard it from Tim Ferriss, where there was this Russian, it was a gymnastics coach. Same thing, grew up, strep throat 5 times a year. And a fellow coach told him about taking vitamin D drops.
Yep.
So I started taking them. And I have, it's been 2 years now. I haven't had strep throat in 2 years. I haven't been sick in 2 years. I haven't gone to the doctor.
That's awesome.
For anything like that related.
The best thing is that you now can change the gene code for your children and how they would have otherwise lived.
So I give them vitamin D drops, and I'm still trying to wean myself off cheeseburgers and french fries, but that's a whole nother story.
Just skip the bun.
I've tried. All right, so body mechanics led you to, what did you do after that? You're interested in body mechanics.
Well, so yeah, I'm now interested, you know, so in college, I was kind of, I didn't have the best direction in the beginning, didn't like face what I really, really liked and enjoyed. So early in my career, I started college and just messed around for the first couple of years and didn't have my head on straight. And then when I got my head on relatively straight, I found kinesiology at University of Maryland, which is the study of human movement.
Okay.
And really just never realized how much science and passion there could be towards something that I enjoyed, which was sports and movement. And then, you know, my mind just expanded. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, as I was learning the mechanical end of things, I really took an interest in sports psychology, which now I just look as success psychology. So I've always been interested in both of those at the same time as I continue to evolve in my life and career.
So applying sports strategy with real life?
Yeah. Success strategy. I mean, if you look at all the things that athletes do, it's like, we're playing a game in life here, and I look at it as a game. But in business, I look at it as a win-win versus someone else is losing.
Yeah. So you got out of college.
Yeah.
Then what?
Well, I focused on, I kind of set my vision on becoming a chiropractor. I thought that was the direction or felt that's where I wanted to go. It just seemed like, you know, I enjoyed working with my hands. I liked the mechanical aspect to it. I liked I knew early on that I was never going to be able to work for somebody for too long in my life. It's just not in my makeup.
Right.
My entrepreneurial spirit started way early, shoveling driveways and just hustling as a kid, and it's just never left. So after college, went to chiropractic school. And while I was in chiropractic school, I latched on to a specific group of chiropractors that had more of a mechanical-based vision. And in the field of chiropractic, you have a wide range of types of and applications and arts of chiropractic. You have stuff that's very engineering-based, and you have stuff that's basically energy-based, right? And, you know, now I'm in a middle ground after many years being in a career, but when I was younger, I was in this field, and I went to an awesome school, Life University, which really is one of the top chiropractic schools in the country, based on sound philosophy, good hands-on skills. So I got a lot of really good training and took a leadership role in specific groups. So learned how to public speak and teach my fellow students, and just was very, very focused and engaged in becoming the best clinician and chiropractor that I could become.
So chiropractic care has a, I don't want to say stigma, but people assume, it was one of the first things we met, I think, doing TV stuff, but then I was having sciatic issues that I got into a car accident and came in.
Yeah.
And I think one of the first things I told you was, do not do that thing where you crack my back. I don't want that. I grew up with my grandfather having a weekly appointment with his chiropractor, and we would take him most times.
Oh, that's cool.
And he would, I grew up hearing, yeah, it's cracked my back, did this, did that. And I just thought, oh my gosh, it sounds so jarring.
Yeah.
So when we met originally, I was thinking that. But then the more I got to know you, you kind of did, I never knew how to explain it, but you, I always told people, yeah, Brian does, he's like a new kind of chiropractor kind of thing.
Well,
like,
I would definitely say that's an appropriate qualification or quality. Yeah. The technique that I was focused on was something called chiropractic biophysics, and Don Harrison was the founder, and his son Deed is taking over that. But he was a mathematical PhD engineer, like master's in engineering and a chiropractor, so real smart dude who said, "All right, there's got to be something different than just cracking and popping joints, and we need some validity and objectivity." So that's where my study went, was like looking at the spine more as an orthodontist versus just a regular dentist. And that was where that came from. Coming out of school, I came out with technical certainty. So that part was, then when I got out of school, I was like, all right, now it's time to run a business. Like, how do you collect money for services? And I had the confidence in my skills. I may have gotten off point there, though. The question was,
did the university teach you how to look at chiropractic, or
no, because it had that school itself, and the way chiropractic school is, some of them, like, you do exactly what they teach you and that's right. It so there's like a base curriculum, but then the cool thing about Life University is that it had a lot of clubs that you could go study. There's probably like 100 different chiropractic techniques out there that you could learn and study. Some are validated, some are not. The one that I was pulled to was something that had peer-reviewed Index Medicus journal studies and a lot of validity to it, because it just made sense, because the other stuff just didn't make sense to me. It didn't work for me.
Yeah.
So I just latched on to that. And so you have the opportunity to learn that.
Okay. Were you looked at as like a renegade for doing some of the things we're going to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely challenged a lot of my teachers, and I was kind of a, you know, egomaniacal dude, I guess. But I was confident in what I was doing, and I was, you know, I wanted, and it was more from a point of passion of wanting to better a profession that I was going to be part of.
Yeah.
And wanting students, not from like just power. That was silly. It was more like I had a vision and a picture of chiropractors having more, like a better reputation. And that comes back to what you were just saying, like how terrified you were.
Oh,
and
freaked out.
The medical profession was, you know, the chiropractors won a court case against the AMA because they used to print anti-chiropractic literature. And it's a newer profession, you know, but people still are laughing at acupuncture, and it's older than Western medicine, you know, thousands of years.
So when I hear, having two kids, you hear that, I don't know what it's called, the skeleton song, like your elbows.
Hip bones connected.
I think of you. Because you, tell me about what your thoughts are, everything's connected. So if you have knee pain, it's not necessarily your knee.
Well, and now you get into the world of pain. Yeah. And that's a whole, we can talk for, a couple of days on that. But, from a clinician's perspective, when we look at pain, especially, under our umbrella here, we look at the cause somewhere above, below, left, or right. And it's typically never where you're actually experiencing pain. But then you go even deeper, and pain is really an emotion, right? Pain is something that you experience in your brain, and its tissue is either being destroyed or damaged or potential for damage. And then your brain picks up that signal and says, hey, there's pain. You shouldn't step off the step that way. Or, also other areas of your life, emotional pain or emotional stressors or nutritional stressors can trigger other things.
Yeah.
Your musculoskeletal system is a slave to the organs in your body. So when those are being, it's going to sacrifice things in your musculoskeletal system to protect organs and other areas in your life that are not working.
So like mechanics have that thing where they plug it into your car and run diagnostics through it and figure out,
yeah.
How do you do that? You can't, as of right now, I don't think you can plug anything to anybody, right?
Not yet, but we use a combination of a physical exam, a conversation, and that's a very overlooked piece is the conversation, because most clinicians focus on, okay, what's your pain? What does it feel like? What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it stop you from doing?
Yeah.
But the real conversation is what you can read between what a patient's saying, how it's affecting their life, and how, their story is their story. And that's okay. What they're living by. So the longer I practice, the more I realize that the emotional connection between a clinician and a client or a patient is really what helps that patient get even better.
Do you think some pain is emotional?
Or
the pain derived from?
Yeah, and it's like your body stores emotions, right? So I love the term embodiment, right? Embodied, like emotions, you get scared. Like think about what you do and what your physical body does. They're really, the hip bone connected. That's even a smaller piece. Everything, we're all connected.
Yeah.
Our emotions, our spirit, and the way it runs through our body and the way that we use that and apply it into our daily life, it makes a difference. And then you can even follow it up with like the tactics behind life or the language that you use. And those of you listening today who are in pain or have some kind of injury, start either recording yourself or listening or having friends listen in, and the language that you hear is, oh, my back's killing me.
I've never heard of a doctor saying that. Like, start off with that.
Yeah, it's
because on your journey to figure out where your pain's coming from.
Listen to your internal dialogue. Listen to how you talk about yourself. Right. And that's a big start just from a success perspective.
Does that speak to The Secret? That whole philosophy of...
Yeah, I watched that movie. I just didn't... It's like everyone, like getting deeper into philosophy and approaches to life, everyone wants just like this quick answer. And it's really all about like your internal environment and how you're speaking to yourself and what the thoughts are. And I was just reading something really cool lately, and it said that emotions last 90 seconds. It's the thoughts that we put behind them that keep those emotions circling over and over and over and over. And there's a huge emotional connection to pain and injury and trauma. And whether it's abuse or a sports injury or something, those all get put into your body. And you embody them. Your emotions and your physical movement become one. And if you look at someone, you can see me on camera here, like you see these people, like put yourself in this position. Sorry, I'm off mic, but you can't really be happy, right? It's like when you smile, you fake. Have you ever faked laughing?
Yeah.
It's awesome. I did this laughter yoga class.
Did you?
Lost my marbles, man. It was so cool. And you hear these other people laughing, and it's besides the vibe that you get from other people, but just letting your laughter go, like almost so you're crying, is it's just that experience can help heal.
It's interesting you say that. I was in New York not too long ago, and we were just walking down the street, popped into a comedy, a lower end comedy club, just because it was there. I thought it was something fun to do, and I didn't, you don't know who any of these people are, and they were horrible, like so bad that it was cricket. Like it's the stereotypical moment where you think you hear crickets.
Yeah.
And I felt bad. Like I felt really bad for these guys. And I know they have to go through that. Like that's their rite of passage or something.
Yeah.
But I was laughing. Like I was forcing myself to try out different like fake laughs and stuff for them, but it changed their mojo up there.
Yes.
You know, it really does speak to that.
Well, and changing your own physiology, like just this morning, I had like 5 different employees bombarding me with questions all at once. And I had to literally put my hand up, hold on, you first, you go. And then I said, all right, I need a reset. And this is something newer in my life where I'm starting to recognize where I'm discombobulated and I'm not able to think creatively. Because when you're in a fight or flight state, creativity is gone. Forget about it, right? So when you need to focus, you can't be in a fight or flight state. So if you're in that fight or flight state, you know, your muscles going, or your blood's going to your muscles, your organs are shutting down, your brain just needs to get out and go. So I went outside, I stood in the sun, and I took 3 deep conscious breaths and just had no thoughts and just turned right back around and boom.
So you took a pause.
That's my favorite word these days.
Pause.
Yeah.
All right. So you're from New Jersey.
Hell yeah.
Menlo Park. Yeah, Thomas Edison.
Yes, sir.
Is that near Neptune? Somewhere around there,
I don't know,
there,
but
right?
that's where I grew up, is that area.
Okay.
I should start using that as a reference, Thomas Edison.
Well, so this is really interesting, and it changed how I looked at being creative and taking that pause, where I was listening to a podcast by Robin Sharma.
Love him.
Yeah, you actually introduced me to that guy.
Right on.
And he had this thing about creativity in Menlo Park. So Thomas Edison had another office or something, right? But he created Menlo Park, as the story goes, to get away. No one was invited there, no family, no friends. It was just Thomas Edison and his trusted, you know, inventors, fellow inventors. And the only thing that happened there was creative stuff. So if they had phones at the time, like cell phones at the time, I could imagine those are thrown away. And the only, when they went in there, it was just free. It was all about being creative. So his idea was have a Menlo Park in your own life. Take a pause. Whether that's renting the office next to yours and occasionally once a week going over there and just getting away, or what I've done is taking a hotel room, for 2 days or a day, and then turning off the phone and just figuring out what I'm creatively going to do, whether that's a blog post or whether that's prep for a show or a branding campaign or something, or just writing in a journal all day.
Yeah.
It's that pause. And I got to tell you get more things done. You feel like you're making progress in your life. And that pause really kind of slows down the rest of the world. And you realize it's all kind of noise.
Yeah.
You know, a lot around you.
A lot of distractions, especially today. Excuse me.
And I'm one of those distractions. Is that what you're trying to say?
No. You're welcome, distraction. No, that's like focus, right? Because there really is no such thing as multitasking. Yeah. Nobody can do it, because if you're multitasking, you're missing out on multiple tasks. You know, I've learned I become hyper-focused on one task, yet then I have to eliminate distractions, and it becomes really challenging in life.
How did you learn how to hyper-focus?
I think it's a part of my ADHD, so that's psychologically, I don't take meds for it. I never did. My mother used physical movement. She kicked me out of the house to go run around the block when I started getting amped up. However, I have that ability to, put some blinders on. It's just something within. Now, to become focused is to eliminate distractions. Put yourself in an environment. I have a specific room that I use. I in the mornings I have a routine.
Here in the house?
Not here.
Okay.
In the office, it's hard for me to be in a creative space. I have to, and I just need to be alone, and not have stuff around me or people that are going to ask questions and things like that, which is, I'm here for that when I'm here, but when I need to be in that creative space, I get somewhere else. I like nature, so that helps me a lot. But I'm taking those hints from you because I need to do that more often. It's just away.
It's great. So, as a doctor, though, you don't hear a lot of doctors being creative, because you think there's one way to doing things, or there's, several different ways and avenues to take things. And how does creativity play a role in your practice or your philosophy of medicine?
Well, I think, as I started as a clinician, creativity was required, because as a chiropractor, you're already doing what people normally don't do. So, it's just you have that creative element is already there. And I had to look at, I had a kid come in once that basically your brain is supposed to be attached in the middle by something called your corpus callosum, and he was born without the attachment. So needless to say, he had some disabilities. Hmm. The parents just handed the kid to me and said, you got to do something. I was like, all right. I don't know what to do. I know what I've been trained to do, but now I got to figure something out. You know,
Does that fall in your...
necessarily, yeah. But it's just, they just wanted to see what kind of help I could create. And you know, was I able to help the kid? I honestly don't remember what his, you know, he's got a lot of things going on, a lot of disabilities that aren't really in my scope or, you know, just treating and putting my hands on somebody and coming up with something creative to help him improve his life for that time period is what I was focused on. Hmm. But as being a doctor, I'm an entrepreneur. You know, and now that's what my focus is because I don't do clinical practice anymore. So I have to come up with creative ways to communicate with patients, creative ways to market, and cutting through all the distractions in this world that we have and all the things that are flying at people that say you should do a cortisone shot or you should get your back operated on or you should get a total knee replacement. You know, those are, now I have to get creative in the way that we're putting our brand out there and our message that says there are options out there that you haven't been told about. And here's what they are.
Well, so let's go back.
Yeah.
You developed you kind of took chiropractic care to the next level and adopted this philosophy of wellness. Like, tell me about that, like advanced wellness.
Sure.
What does that mean?
So I saw limitations early on in what I can offer our clients. You know, because as a chiropractor, my focus is the spine, right? I can deal with problems from the neck all the way through the back. Yet I get a lot of people come in with wrist injuries, shoulders injuries, foot injuries, elbow injuries, and I could treat them, but I can't fully. So I said, all right, there's a gap. I'm missing something. What am I missing? And I looked at integrating physical therapy. And turns out that my cousin through marriage, Andy, who you've met before, mm-hmm. is now my business partner, is a physical therapist and acupuncturist and just a wizard at treating pain. And that's his life's mission, is to figure out chronic pain and help people with that. So we joined forces, integrated chiropractic and PT. Mm-hmm. Talk about creativity. There's a lot of creativity in how to put systems together. And sometimes it's very linear thinking. Sometimes it's very nonlinear thinking. So we had to work to get that organization together so we could be functional and successful. And then we realized, all right, we're missing out on something else. You know, we're missing out on another area. And I've always, you know, from a business perspective and then also from a service perspective of what I could offer, I want to offer more. I want it all mm-hmm. under one roof. And I also want to be unique and create something that nobody else has done before. So we eventually added a medical department. And still all within that same philosophy of helping people avoid surgery.
So that's huge, yeah. With you guys.
Yeah, avoiding surgery. And we referred two or three cases out this week for total knee replacement, hip replacement, because we're not going to do things for people just for the sake of doing them and collecting revenue. That's just not in our, in the way we do business. So staying young, keeping active, and avoiding surgery.
What is the benefit of avoiding surgery?
Well,
especially the back. You hear a lot of people that once they have back surgery, they're just never the same.
Well, in some surgeries, and I always want to put this caveat on there, but sometimes there's no other options but surgery, you know, and it really just depends on how far you let things go or if the damage is too much where your body can't heal itself or anything that you can do from the outside. The part that scares me is some of the procedures and pills and the backside danger to all those things. You know, the addiction to opioids. You have to not only heal from what they do for you in surgery, you have to heal from the surgery itself. You know, anesthesia, when you get anesthetized, mm-hmm. you know, it beats up on your immune system. I had to go under a procedure, it's kind of an emergency last year, and I had to get anesthetized and I was sick for like 3 weeks and I don't get sick. And it just destroys your immune system. It beats it up. So you have to recover not just from the surgery, but the whole process of everything you're going through as well.
So this is completely off base, but whenever I hear that word, I think of Michael Jackson So if you're using it so casually to sleep over and over and over again for years, that's really destroying your body.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And it comes down to those, you know, as basic as you can get, are you sleeping? You know, do you have a sex drive? And are you awake during the day? Do you have brain fog? Like all of these things as an adult are what shows you that, you have a normal functioning body.
People that come in here, and how much does sleep play a role in why they're here?
I don't know percentage wise, but it's huge.
Yeah,
because if you don't sleep, you're stressing all your other organs to overwork, especially your heart and your lungs. You know, so sleep apnea is a huge piece, and we have some solutions for sleep apnea that we work with, because again, if you're not breathing at night, you're not oxygenating your tissues, you're not healing, you're not getting psychological repair when you're sleeping, you're not getting physical repair, because your body destroys itself and you destroy your body all day long and it replenishes itself. You regenerate your own tissues. That's what stem cells do. They help you regenerate those tissues. And that's why we use that as a science now, and I've learned the science behind it to help heal tissues that otherwise wouldn't heal. You like that segue? That was good.
I did. So, yeah. You know, stem cells always, why is that so controversial?
Because people are looking to take them from outside of your body from other sources, like embryonic stem cells
and
other,
like, yeah,
and do
stuff.
Things and grow them and culture them. But there's a whole different world to that, especially in the orthopedic world. And that's what we've gotten into, which I'm super passionate and excited about, which is regenerative orthopedics.
Okay.
You know, in this office, in this organization, we focus only on the orthopedic injuries and the damage caused by chronic pain, joint degeneration, and arthritis. So those are a breakdown. Everyone says, I got arthritis, right? So we usually start getting it, but it's a breakdown of a joint of the cartilage and the other
tissues
around there.
Is that just bone rubbing against each other?
At the end stage, yeah.
Okay.
And the concept of stem cells is that you take them from your own body, from the bone marrow is the best place where you get what's called mesenchymal stem cells. You can harvest them from your own body with specific techniques, and you can inject them into an injured joint. I see this as a future, and even Dr. Proper, who works with us, is an expert in regenerative orthopedics. He put his scalpel down to focus on this and help people avoid surgery. Yet,
really?
Yeah, he still does those surgeries, but just very few.
All right, so I have a question, and I'm not going to get any of this accurate or correct. So there was a doctor in like the 1920s, early 1900s, let's say, just to cover my bases. And he did a study he took two mice. One was a really, really, really old gray-haired mouse, and the other was a young mouse. They took the stem cells from this is what they did. They cut open both mice, put them together, so things were going back and forth. And the old white-haired mouse became young again and lost the white hair or the gray hair, turned into what, you know, running around and all that kind of stuff. The guy was just kicked out of medicine. They thought it was crazy.
I'm sure.
But then, like, I know I'm going to get comments
Dr.
below.
Dr. Frankenstein?
I'm going to get comments below because I'm not going to get this right. But all these years later, I want to say, like, Harvard and all these top-notch medical schools, like maybe Johns Hopkins, did that again. And they realized it was, like, recently, over the last couple of years. And they think it's the stem cells, because we lose stem cells around 25. Is that right?
Well, you still have them in your body.
They decrease. Dissipate.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not the scientific expert on stem cells. So yeah. I'll lay that out.
Because where can I get some of those young mouse stem cells?
Well, you have stem cells in your own body, though. Because your
that
tissues,
I can use.
Yeah, your okay. tissues, they're in your bone marrow and they're in other places. But the best place to get them for orthopedic injuries is within your bone marrow.
All right, I don't want to freak everybody out, but how do you extract those?
We can do a live tour of our surgery room in there, and I'll show you.
Oh boy!
Yeah. So under fluoroscopic guidance, you can get them from your pelvis, and you go through the bone, and this is all done under a local anesthesia, so you don't feel the pain, and you're going in through the pelvis and you're getting into the bone marrow through the outside of the bone and inside where you get those stem cells. So stem cells can either differentiate into different tissues or they can recreate themselves as well. So we're taking those stem cells along with blood from your own body and taking the platelets from that blood, which are the healing element inside your blood, and we're putting those together and helping joints and ligaments and tendons heal.
Do they regenerate?
Yeah, that's what happens.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
I know we live in a world of instant gratification. How long does that take for you to notice a difference?
Yeah, and if you're looking at like 2 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
And it's funny because that's not close to instant for people, because when you do a cortisone shot, you feel great, or you can feel better immediately. Yet, you know, you do 3 cortisone shots and you have to start worrying about it eroding tissue way?
So I would say the mass majority of the listeners and viewers hear cortisone and they think like football athletes. They get hurt, they go underneath the stadium, get a shot. Is that what they're getting shot with?
I don't know exactly, but I would assume so, okay. Or some kind of painkiller or something. Yet, what's the wear and tear of that? Once you use it too much, it starts wearing, eroding bone away and cartilage, and it's dangerous. It's bad for you with long-term use. But short-term, sometimes it's the only choice.
Okay.
You know, so, excuse me. So I'm not going to downplay it because it has its use. I just think it's been overused, and it has become a standard for a lot of injuries and things like that. And there's other things that can be done, especially like when you look at what we do in this clinic with Andy's reflex pattern therapy work. Like I've seen people crawl in here and walk out without an injection. You know, sometimes it's been acupuncture, other times it's been RPT, other times I've done it myself on the table.
So for the most part, cortisone is a temporary fix. Would you say that?
It doesn't heal anything. It takes inflammation down, but inflammation is there for a reason.
It comes back.
Yeah. If the injury mechanism is still there in place. Yeah.
Have you merged your athletic background with your practice? There's a poster of a running back up in the lobby there. Do you do much with athletes?
We work on a lot of athletes, yeah. And it's, you know, our practice ranges from womb to tomb. And so I've had newborns in here. I've had, you know, 99-year-olds.
What do you do with newborns?
Pinkies.
But how do they know, like...
There's specific techniques that
How does the parent know that the kid's having a problem?
Well, you know, from a chiropractic perspective, parents have brought children to chiropractors for a host of conditions, chronic ear infections, torticollis. Which is where you're... So a lot of times when you do have chronic ear infections and things aren't clearing out, there could be restrictions in the way the head and neck are moving and things like that. So, you know, if you study how to do pediatric chiropractic care, which... you know, I've studied that. I don't do it anymore. I have someone that I send people to, but yeah, that's the first line that I would look at before going to medication.
So everything's connected again.
Yep. You know? Well, let's get back to the athlete stuff.
Yeah.
You'd ask, so you and I can get off track pretty easily, right? So athletes, yes. That's nonlinear thinking, right? So we work on a lot of athletes, whether it's a chronic injury. Andy specifically does a lot of work with our athletes and some high-level people, a lot of professional basketball players we've worked with. You name it, a lot of local high school athletes who need to get back on the field quickly. And you don't always want to inject them. Sometimes that's the only choice. You know, but there's a different mindset when you're an athlete versus when you're in general population versus when you're a weekend warrior. You know, if you're aging and you want to stay young and feel active, or at least feel young and stay active, you know, there are a lot of options out there for you besides some of the dangerous pills or procedures and surgeries that you can get. And I believe that we should, you know, I've committed to surfing and skiing till I die. So, and that's hopefully till 120. So I'm doing now what I need to do, you know, what I know I'm going to need to feel in my 70s and 80s so I can keep moving.
Well, what is your advice for those listening who want to live a healthy life? Let's say they are experiencing some pain, whether it's in their knee or their back or their joints. What would you say to them?
Well, there are general guidelines. I'll start with the general, and then we get more specific depending on what your injuries are. You know, the thoughts that are constantly in your mind, you know, they dictate your behavior and your personality and things like that. So if you want to change how you live your life, you need to change how your thoughts are and what you're doing, you know, what your internal dialogue is, and then how that goes out to the external world. Your sleep habits need to be sound. You know, we were designed to sleep when the sun goes down, and when the sun comes up, we are supposed to wake up, and we have hormonal cycles that work with the circadian rhythm. So the closer you can get to that cycle, the healthier your body is.
Now, for someone being so driven and busy, how do you stick with that? How do you make sure that you're in bed and raising two kids?
That's a good question. It's challenging, and I commit to it.
Do you force yourself to go to bed sometimes, even though you have some things left on the plate?
Yes, a lot, because like, especially if I get hooked on a show, and I want to watch like 7 episodes in a row.
That's what I do.
It's tough. And I'm like, dude, it's 10:30. Go to bed.
I can't let the phone in the room anymore, in my bedroom.
That's smart. I haven't done that yet.
I haven't done it either, but I need to.
Yeah, and just put it outside. Yeah. It's good. You know, it's cool to listen to Tim Ferriss. He gives tips all the time. But, you know, so sleep habits are very important, going to sleep at a good time. And just knowing that, like, I feel like garbage when I don't sleep well. And it's, I usually, like, when my head hits the pillow, I'm out in a couple seconds. My kids know, because it's usually on the couch first. They're like, Daddy, wake up. So sleep habits, nutrition habits. You know, start assessing how you feel after you eat. Take a diary and, like, do a diet diary. Not just what you eat, but, like, what you eat, how you feel emotionally, how you feel physically. And then start to tool your diet to where you're not feeling bloated, or you're not feeling depressed, and you're not feeling low energy or fatigued. Those are a huge component for what you can do throughout the day.
You know, that's a common theme so far of journaling, whether you journal how you're talking to yourself or whether you journal what you're eating. I guess you have to go back to you and it, like, not self-diagnose, but what do they call it now? Self-autopsy? Of where you're looking into you, how are you interacting with other people, or how positive you are?
Yeah,
and kind of, most people don't do that.
No,
you know,
journaling's been a savior for me. I like, for me, you know, I've done where you're listing gratitude. You're also looking back at your day and looking where successes and failures were and what you learned. I found, like, free writing is good for me too. So I'll just, you know, I'll have a cup of coffee and you know, I've made meditation a habit, just like brushing my teeth. But I'll brush my teeth first,
all right.
Get ready for the day, and then I'll meditate for usually 15 minutes a
day.
That
is on my list to talk to you about.
Okay, cool.
So we're going to go back to all that.
Okay.
So you're telling people if they're not feeling well.
Nutrition. Sleep, nutrition, healthy movement, like movement you enjoy.
Okay.
Right? So movement, like, you know, because sometimes I've gotten to a space where I'm like, I just don't work out to work out. I work out to prepare my mind and my body and my spirit for just the daily rigors of life. And so, like, I enjoy mountain biking or trail riding. So, you know, I went out and rode this weekend. So, you know, and I like swimming in the pool now and not lifting weights as much as I used to, because my body's changed. And I like to do things because I want to have a good physique. Mm-hmm. I want to feel good. I want to feel like I can run away from zombies if they come at me. And, you know, that whole thing.
What is your philosophy on nutrition? Like, what does your meal plan look like? Are you off dairy altogether?
No dairy.
No cheese.
That's a lie. I like grass-fed cheese, so okay. I do have that on occasion. So,
and what's the difference between?
Well, it's cheese that's made from cows that grow up eating grass versus foods that they're not supposed to eat.
Okay.
So, like, cows are designed to eat grass, not the food that, like, a typical you know, like
pellets or whatever.
Well, pellets, and I'm trying to think of the right word, but like the mass produced cows are not healthy. They're on antibiotics. They're eating food they shouldn't eat, so they get sick. They got to take the antibiotics. They're on steroids to get them bigger. So I like to eat organic meats. I eat meats and vegetables and nuts and seeds. And I like to do some intermittent fasting. I'm a big fan of bulletproof coffee. I found that it really helps me. You know, I can think clearly. I have just as much energy even more. I've just learned how to become a fat burner versus a sugar burner.
How often do you fast?
Like full up, probably 6 days a week. I do
six days a week.
Intermittent fasting.
The 16-8?
I end up doing, I mean, for me, I've kind of modified it for myself, but I'll have, I attempt to stop eating at 8 o'clock. Okay. And this is, I would say, you know, average out like 5 days a week with this. So I stop eating at 8, and then in the morning I'll have 2 bulletproof coffees. And then I probably have a snack around like 10 or 10:30 in the morning, which is either I have some grass-fed collagen bars through Mark Sisson's company that I get, or I'll have a couple scoops of almond butter. And then I like to work out after that, like midday, and use my fat as an energy source to burn while I'm working out. And then I will replenish and eat a bigger lunch. But I like to balance my food with saturated animal fats and other, you know, vegetable fats.
So saturated fats.
Yeah, but from an organic perspective. Okay. Yeah. So that, more vegetables. I don't really eat fruit. On occasion, I'll have apples.
Because of the
stuff.
Sugar?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And this is just what I've adapted for myself.
Yeah.
And I found that my nutrition and my digestion, my metabolism has changed as I've gotten older. And I think my tweaking with my own nutrition has helped. So no white table salt, no white milk. I don't eat bread or pastas. I have quinoa once in a while, rice once in a while.
When was the last time you had pasta?
I can't remember.
Really?
Yeah, I barely eat it. My kids love it, and it's hard for me not to let them eat it. I'm sure I've had a little bit. Yeah, I think I went on a date recently, and I had pasta.
Did you?
I did, yeah.
It was good, though, right?
It was, yeah.
Did you feel like crap afterwards?
No, because I barely ate any. Okay. It was a little bit. So, and I have pizza every time I go to the Jersey Shore, of course. That's my thing.
One thing I've always struggled with. I was an athlete all of my younger life, and then once you get into college, I was working three jobs to put myself through college and all that, and then you just eat. And
yeah.
I'm probably an emotional eater, like a comfort eater. So as I'm getting older, I want to be around longer, but feel like everything you're saying, feel better and look better. And
I love food. Yeah. I love eating. I just, you know, I now temper what I'm going to eat. And it's like when I eat, if I eat a bowl of pasta or a piece of pizza, I feel like garbage after. So I'd rather spend the time and cook good food or go out to good, healthy food and, you know, feel better when I eat.
How did you develop that discipline to be able to say no?
I don't know.
Is it just a light switch?
There was a light switch, and there was a certain period of my life. You know what it was? I went surfing in Costa Rica with one of my buddies and a bunch of dudes. We went to Costa Rica about 7 years ago, and I showed up, and I was fat and sick. And I was like looking at myself like, oh, my God, I'm like missing an opportunity. And I was working hard, you know, just working all the time and, you know, building a business and just forgot about myself. Mm. And wasn't really practicing what I was preaching. And it flipped the switch. And I was like, I can't go back this way anymore. So that was it.
Do you have cheat days?
Yeah.
Like the pizza?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll you know, and I have less and less cheat days now. And it's,
should I call them cheat meals and not cheat days?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I definitely, yeah, but there's days where, you know, I'm going to town.
Yeah.
Just because I enjoy it. It feels good psychologically to eat the things that I like. But for the most part, I feel like garbage if I eat. Garbage.
Do you fit in like a beer here and there?
Often, yeah. Often. and wine, yes.
Well, that's a good thing.
I'm not a big drinker, but I enjoy it, so I don't rule that stuff out.
Yeah.
I'm not super disciplined, but alcohol hasn't really served me well in my life, so I'm less and less into it. You know, the older and wiser, more experienced I get.
Just drinking too much makes bad decisions, or.
I've made a lot of bad decisions, and most of the times I've gotten into trouble, alcohol was a friend or not a friend or an accomplice.
How much do you say you drink now?
Now? I mean, a couple drinks in a week,
yeah.
A couple glasses of wine, that's it. Or a couple beers here and there.
But I was thinking the other day, you know, it's we're recording this around Halloween time.
Yeah.
And you go on social media and everyone's at a Halloween party. You know, with their pictures and stuff. I don't know how I did that back then, you know, and going out many times a week for a particular purpose, you know, to feel good and your body suffers, but just, I don't know how.
Well, I can't focus well the next day. Yeah. And like, you know, my job now requires me to be very, very present. Like, and if I'm hungover or distracted hormonally because my emotions are all awry from drinking and then being depressed the next day, like I don't have time for it.
Or all the drama that comes with the drinking.
Yes, that too, and the dumb texts you may send or whatever that, whatever the things you may say. And my friends that are listening to this know that I definitely have my mouth has gotten the best of me when I'm drinking sometimes. So however, you know, I serve a higher purpose now, and my purpose is to, you know, really help people not get surgery and not take drugs, and more depth to that is to take responsibility for their lives, and I have to be an example of that. Mm. And I have to show people, look, you have to, here's what it takes. Here's the discipline. And it's the, you know, in your heart, what you want to do to really accomplish this lifestyle is you got to have an attachment to it. And, you know, one of the coolest things that the rewards that I get, I sit when I have my kids in the mornings, when I talk to them, I'm like a philosopher and I'm drinking coffee. They're sitting there, I'm getting them off their devices and I'm asking them questions and probing. And, you know, Daddy, you're so weird, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll hear my daughter like give a speech or talk to her friends, and she's saying the things that
she's
I
repeating,
talk. Yeah, and yeah. I'm like, thank you, God. Like, I just keep going, man. Ask difficult questions, and you know, just face the truth.
Is that your motivating factor to keep going? Like, you see the progress. Like, do you have customer, like, seeing the progress with your daughter or patients coming in?
I call them clients.
Clients.
Because customers are like a one-time transaction.
Yeah.
And clients are a lifetime relationship. And that's really what we
What is their reaction with you when they tell you their story of, I feel better and I didn't have to get surgery?
My reaction is, that's what stokes my fire, man. And that's why, like, I want to send that out to the whole world. That's the question that I ask my clients when we do a testimonial. Like, picture your friend, the skeptic that's sitting back there trying to figure out, what the hell am I going to do about my back because I can't function anymore?
Yeah.
And I've been there in my own life, and I've had results through things that I've done, and particularly chiropractic as a young person, and then all the things that we do here. You know, I'm fortunate to have some of the top clinicians in the world be able to work on me and help me do the things, because I'm still very active. Mm-hmm. So, that's really what ignites me. That, and when someone says, you know what, doc, I didn't eat blah, blah, blah this week, or I exercised, I got in the pool 6 times this week, and I'm starting to take responsibility and control of my own life.
Mm-hmm.
And when people realize that it has nothing to do with the doctor, it has to do with the doctor that's inside of them, that they learn how to turn on.
That's empowering.
Yeah.
All right, so let's go back to the business a bit. When you were doing, I don't want to say basic chiropractic care, and you decided to go into that advanced wellness way of doing things, was that a scary transition? You grew the business. When we first met, you were around the corner in a smaller facility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, look at this. This doesn't look like a chiropractor,
no.
chiropractic office.
Yeah. So
was that a scary jump?
Well, I'll take it back even further step. And, when I first got out of school, I worked for a great company that was more of an internship. So I got a very low pay, but had the ability to learn. And mm-hmm. nowadays it's very different. People are coming out expecting this 6-figure salary right out of school with zero experience. And, you know, it's pretty funny, and I feel like I sound like an old dude, but I'm not. However, I took a very low salary to learn, and fortunately, I was in a, you know, when I was married, then I had the ability to be supported so that I could learn and sharpen my axe, so to speak. And I always had a drive, and that situation wasn't available for me to build a business with this company. So I opened my own business out of a small room, which is how we met,
mm-hmm.
because I was in a gym and met trainers that introduced us.
Mm-hmm.
Our dear friend who passed. And so I started in that small office. And even before that, I was going to people's houses that I knew with a table, like a travel table, and working, you know, and I would work on someone for like an hour. I remember it was like,
what was the end game in your mind then?
Then
were you thinking every day taking that table?
I need to get
table?
To an office to, yeah. to take the table so I can open my own business and run it and grow it. And then my vision keeps changing though. So it's like I get these visions, and then it changes and it modifies based on what the market is showing me,
yeah.
and based on what I learn and the mistakes that I make. So I started in 1,100 square feet. So moving to that first office, it was me and a receptionist, and it was terrifying. You know, I had my parents gifted me a little bit of money to get started,
mm-hmm.
and that allowed me to get a loan. And I took that loan and I bought like an office desk, and you know, you just get it all going, from a fax machine to the phone system to the chiropractic equipment.
Was it sink or swim moment?
Sink or swim. Yeah. I think every moment was,
yeah.
you know, it was like going way back to the gym. I remember sitting back there. I'm like, all right, dude, get off your butt and go talk to people, because it ain't about build it and they will come. So I looked at my shoes and I said, you know what? The rubber on the soles is made for walking. Get off your butt, go meet people and go talk. And I knew I had that ability. You get scared. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a 26-year-old kid coming out of college. I was very confident in that world of college, and then going to the real world and I have to ask money for your services and an exchange. That's a big ask, and it's a big step as a professional. And that was, you know, going after that. And I've learned a lot. I've learned so much. I had awesome clients then, and some I still have. from those days, and I would walk around the streets, hand out flyers, just start talking to people, spread the mission of chiropractic and what I can offer to people. And then that same passion just expanded to what I did now. And now I just, I like getting in larger media, you know, and speaking to more people at once. So every growth point was terrifying, and it still is.
How did you go from one point to the next, that chasm in between where you were and where you wanted to be?
Organization, preparation, and, you know, lining things up so I could see it in a way that I knew what I had to do. It takes a very, that is linear thinking. You know, that's very linear. That's not that creative, for at least how I see it. It's like, okay, I know, you know, I have to do X, Y, Z to get a license, to get building, to get this, to get that. So it's like every step along the way is something you have to linearly plan out. And I think the biggest lesson that I've learned from every expansion is to breathe, pause, and not react or overreact.
Did that fear ever lead you into procrastination?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
How did you break the procrastination cycle?
It's like that self-realization that you just have to, you got to say, look, the fear is not real. And it's like, if you want to grow, you got to take a risk.
Yeah.
And you got to just, the fear is there, but I just don't let it in the front seat. You know, I put it behind, and I have to move forward no matter what. And of course I'm human. I'm going to get down on myself. And then I realize, all right, dude, you got to, this is be patient. Breathe. You're doing the right things. And when you don't do the right things, learn the lesson quick and adjust, modify, you know, and that comes true with like marketing and things like that, because marketing in a market like this is very, very expensive, advertising, things like that, online and everything. So you have to really, you know, be able to be smart and objective and think linearly, like, okay, I put this ad out. What's the response? What's the return on the investment? Are we going to keep doing it or take it out? Well, change a headline.
That's actually getting into some of my wrap-up questions. What role did media play in your success or your building the?
Well, you made all my first videos, so it's a huge success.
Yeah, thank you.
You helped me get not shy in front of camera, or not shy. You got me to love being in front of the camera, and that was a huge growth point for me. Media.
Well, why didn't you want to do it? Did you feel that you weren't qualified?
No, I was self-conscious and not confident enough, and just I had to get out of my own way, you know. And it's like, dude, it's a camera and a microphone and headphones, and I get joy in it now. It's fun, and I love this. This gives me this fires me up, because I know I'm talking to you, but something that I say will have an effect on one person, which ripples. That you can't even see where those ripples affect. And that's really what my mission is to, you know, again, help people take responsibility for their own health and their own lives. So if I say one thing that inspires somebody to inspire somebody else and create another leader, then I've done my job. Media has been huge, from the internet to just television, radio.
So you're doing a lot of things on news channels, on television?
In the last couple of years I was, yeah.
You did TED Talks?
I've done one. Yes.
What was that experience like?
Incredible. Holy moly. That was such a cool opportunity. I'm so grateful for that.
How did you prepare for that?
that was a big preparation. So my friend, she's a neighbor at the beach at the Jersey Shore, and she was running TEDx Hoboken and asked me to pitch her, and I pitched her, and I got the ability to create this presentation, and she introduced me to a coach who guy's amazing at doing TED Talks, and then also is like an executive speaking coach, and he really just helped me open up from a vulnerable place. So I studied a lot of speaking skills, took some courses, Dale Carnegie stuff, and then, you know, just dove into not lecturing and teaching, because that's how I started in that world, and really just presenting and entertaining, and I'm still working on that game every day. That's something that I really enjoy and want to increase and improve as I grow my career, was becoming a better presenter, entertainer. So because I feel like that gets into the emotion and the psychology of people, then you can get the point across better. because most people are on the defense and they're like, well, who's this fool? You know, and what's he doing? Why does he have so much energy? He's annoying. So, you know, I'm going to bring that up quick. I got a lot of energy and I need someone in the crowd to help slow me down.
Set the expectations right up front.
Exactly. So, TED Talk was incredible. It's just a terrifying experience. If you've read the books on like flow state, the studies on like Human Genome Project, those guys are awesome. And talk about a flow state. You know, I experienced that as a teenager in sports and then older in sports and different activities and stuff like that, but nothing in like an intellectual capacity like it was in that moment. And I can still go back and clearly see it slowed down. It was complete slow motion. If I could do like the Jim Carrey slow, I can't do it. It was an unbelievable experience from start to finish. The people that I met, the training that I got was absolutely priceless.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What has been your biggest failure that led you to a breakthrough?
That's awesome. I tried to open offices with multiple offices, like different locations, and I just was not prepared. I didn't have the right staffing. I didn't have the right enough organization. So I learned a lot, and that gave me a different focus on what I wanted to create it and how I can fine-tune that, and now I have a different mission.
So you actually look at that as that failure got you to a
if I'm not going to learn from my failures, then I'm just going to stick in that whole negative lack of responsibility trait. And that's just not how I'm rolling. So, I've failed a lot. We've had a lot of different things in here to try and fail. And it's like, if you're not risking and going out there on the limb to create, then, you know, and now I've just gotten the breakthrough is to get a lot smarter and vet out the process behind all of it. You know, are we ready for marketing? Are we ready for operations? You know, and instead of ready, fire, aim, it's ready, aim, fire. So that's a thing I have to remind myself, because you get caught up in the excitement of something new.
It's fun to launch something.
It is. Yet, if you're not prepared to market it, you're not prepared for operations, you just get kicked in the teeth. So,
what's your morning ritual look like? Do you have one?
Yeah. I wake up usually like either 5:30 or 6, just depending on how late I'm up. But I attempt to go to bed between 10:30 and 11, trying even earlier at 10. So wake up, I get ready for the day, and then I have a specific place and room where I meditate.
What is that? TM or just?
No, I've never taken the TM course. I do all sorts of meditation. I mean, the key that I've found is that can you return back to that space of presence and in the immediate experience? And that's what I've found to, you know, because you're going to stray, whether it's thinking about the morning. So one thing I do, I don't check email. I don't check my phone. I don't text. I don't do anything in the morning besides physically, you know, getting ready, taking a shower, brushing my teeth, shaving, if I'm doing that, and get dressed. And then I will go right down into my room. Even if my kids are there, they know if the door's closed, like, don't knock on the door. My cat sits outside and waits for me.
Our friend Alan, who's going to be on the podcast.
Love that guy.
He told me, I don't check my phone in the morning because what's going to happen? If it's a bad email, then I'm going to be in a bad mood. Totally. If it's a great email, so what? Like,
well, it's someone else getting in your space.
Yeah.
Right? So you're letting someone else dictate what may or may not happen. And like that, for me, I'm a morning person anyway. So I get up, I'm energetic, I'm moving.
How do you move in the morning? Do you do any type of...
No, not necessarily. I don't do any exercise type movement. I definitely could serve to do that better. I just do some general body stretching and stuff before I get down to meditate. It's more of a mental, spiritual game for me. Yeah, and I think in the morning for me, just because I know during the day I'm always hustling back and forth in this office and I'm working out every day. So I definitely could add that to my day, like a good stretch or yoga routine. It's just there's limited time.
Yeah.
So I make sure that I... You know, once I finish meditation, I'll go down, I'll make my coffee, I'll sit down, and I like reading a spiritual book and or journaling, both at the same time, just depending on what that time is. And I've locked it off on my phone for 6 to 7 a.m. It just says self.
Your journaling sounded very similar to Robin Sharma's technique of journaling.
I've studied a lot of his stuff. So,
you go over the successes.
Yeah.
You are grateful for certain things.
Now, I'm not there all the time. I have done that, but gratitude is huge.
Yeah.
And really...
Why is that?
I learned this term from Tony Robbins, was like, trade your expectations for appreciation. And you start to think about, all right, am I thinking about myself and all these other crazy expectations? And then I just look back and I'm so thankful for my kids in my life and my team, my business partner, my relationships, my friendships that I have. And instead of just writing about it, what I've worked on in the last couple of years is actually putting myself in that space and feeling it.
How do you do that?
I put a memory or an experience.
Like relive it?
Yeah. So there was one time where I was picking up my kids from their mom's house and I came back from, I think, a Tony Robbins seminar. And so I'm all jazzed up and I grabbed them both. I don't know, or maybe it wasn't, but I grabbed them both and we just started dancing in a circle. And, you know, I relive that moment and put myself in that space. Mm. And, you know, because they keep getting older and we all keep getting older and they're forming their own lives. Yet I'm just so thankful that I have them in my life. And they teach me so
much.
We
were talking about this before we went to air. What's that like? So I have a 5- and an 8-year-old. And I think every single day I watch how they're getting, you know, taking a little step away from me and away from me, and where I'm not the center of their life anymore.
Yeah.
You know, neither myself or mommy is the center of their life. And it breaks my heart when I think about it.
Yeah.
How do you... is that something you prepare for? Is that you just get acclimated as moments happen where you get a dirty look?
I think, yeah. I think the key to it's funny because they're the greatest lesson I've ever had. Because like I can work on all this stuff and not be reactive in business, and I just go right back to these old stupid patterns that I'm part of with your kids, because you get so raw. Mine are 13 and 11 now, and I'm like full fledged like teenage years, mouthing off, rolling the eyes. I feel like an Uber at an ATM sometimes. However, I really work on staying engaged and staying present. And it's challenging. Like as a single dad, it's like there's other distractions in life and it just sometimes gets overwhelming. Yet, that's part of my mission in life as well, is to help create safety for them to become successful people and individuals and loving individuals.
A lot of lessons.
Yeah.
Do they like the lessons?
I don't think they like them now, but they take them and they learn.
You know what? I'm convinced they do.
Yeah.
My daughter tells me all the time, does this have to be a lesson today? And
of course.
Yeah, of course. That's my answer. It's always of course. All right, cool. All right, we're going to wrap up. Real quick. You're an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the extremist, but
not
yes.
Extreme.
Yeah.
You're not diving off of buildings or anything, but you surf.
No. Yeah.
Have you skydived?
Not yet, but I have a Groupon sitting there ready to go.
But does that align with do the walk, you know?
I mean, it's...
What is that, walk the talk?
Walk the talk, the walk. I believe that's... I mean, it's just what I'm into. Like, I just don't like... You know, I grew up playing ball sports and team sports, and I just don't enjoy it anymore. That competitive edge has shifted, you know, and it's more like, all right, can you stay present and sit and wait for waves? Like, that's more of a challenge for me.
Yeah.
And I don't surf big waves. I just like to surf, and I like to ski, and I like to be out in the environment. And the challenge is really against myself and not against the planet, but how can you be one with the planet? Like, I'm out there in the cold in a high, super high environment, like high altitude, and, you know, can I sustain the whole day? Or, you know, it really is like these flow states getting into. That's kind of what I'm addicted to. It's not just the rush, but it's like being present. I went to the haunted forest and was extremely present, let myself go and laugh and be scared. They're all over the place here.
Oh, like a haunted...
Yeah, like with my kids.
Corn maze or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I've never been to one of these. I want to go. And it was just fun to like... You know, my laughter was me
being
scared.
Does anyone touch you in those situations?
Yeah, they're all over you, man. Yeah, and it's like, how do you not react?
I don't know how well I would do
in those
situations.
It was fun. I loved it. It was hysterical. But, you know, just getting out on the trail and riding my bike and, like, being present and being focused on not dying and not getting injured, you know, and I don't do it to not – I do it to get through. And, you know, I've done adventure races and things like that, which is awesome. Like, the challenge and the rush that it brings to use your brain, and not like a Tough Mudder, but where you have to do checkpoints and things like that.
And you're in an uncomfortable position to test yourself.
Yeah.
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 And you had mentioned surfing, and one analogy, and this is kind of what the podcast is all about, making waves. And if you – take the analogy of surfing. You have to paddle out, which is hard. You know, you're getting hit by expectations. You're getting hit by, you know, tragedy. You're getting hit by certain things if you want to kind of make the wave, make surfing and life comparison. And then when you get out there to a point where you're somewhat relaxed, you're waiting. And you're waiting and you're looking. And then when you see something come, you have to work for it.
Yes.
You can't just sit there and the wave will pick you up and you're off on your ride. And then it takes you back. Let's say you fall off the wave, like your failure with opening up so many places and stuff. You fall off, you get back on, you got to go back and paddle out again. But when you get that wave and you have that moment, you got to be present in that moment, enjoy it. But what happens? It takes you back to the shore and you got to do it all over again.
Yep.
But that's life.
But you learn every time.
Yeah.
Every time. So hopefully you're paying attention when you're out there.
Right.
But it's, you know, you mentioned sitting and waiting and being patient. That's a lesson in life for me.
Yeah.
You know, I've been out there with my son and he's getting very impatient and I'm reacting to his impatience. So I've learned from that as well. You know, and then just, you know, just being in the water and connected to the universe.
Yeah. One of the last things, this is where you pass the baton. And we've talked a little bit about this, so I think I know who you're going to pass it to. But pass the microphone to someone that you think that our listeners should learn more about.
Oh, my God. I have a million people, but Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss.
But you know, specifically someone that we can get here. So you're going to hand that baton over to somebody. But your friend that you had talked about, who the MMA?
Oh, yeah. Andre. Yeah, he's got an awesome story. Do you want me to tell you about it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to steal his thunder.
Give us a little bit. But, you're passing that microphone to Andre.
Okay, got it. Perfect. Okay. So Andre was I've recently met him through his wonderful girlfriend, Danny, and he was an MMA fighter, a cancer survivor, a business owner, and just a beautiful spirit. And the guy has just so much love and experience to give, and he's still learning to, you know, just deal with life like we all are.
Yeah.
And just has an awesome story to share.
All right, well, we'll get him on here.
Yes.
And thank you for making that connection.
You got it, man.
Where can people find you?
Painarthritisrelief.com.
Are you on social media?
All over. Yeah, but it's all under Pain Arthritis. I forgot what our thing is, honestly.
Okay.
But we're on Facebook as Pain Arthritis Relief. We're in Rockville, Maryland, and where else are we?
Do you have any private accounts that you post your surfing pictures from or anything like that?
No, I keep that all for me.
That's nice.
Yeah, for a while I was like checking out social media and then I just stopped.
Yeah.
I use it for business, you know, marketing and stuff, but I just don't fill my time with scrolling through other people's lives.
Don't want to know what I had for lunch.
No, definitely not. Or how many burpees you did last night or anything like that. So, no, I save
my
that.
My favorite are these yoga pictures that people put up. It's like, I get it.
Yeah.
You know how to do yoga.
Yeah, totally.
I can barely sit down. That's
I don't,
okay.
I've shied away from it in the last, you know, last year or so. I took it off my phone. And it's just made life a lot, you know, I'm able to stay present. And I don't fill my time with just scrolling and
what's the takeaway from that?
How has life
changed?
I'm more focused and present and when I'm in my interactions. It was funny, I went to I was with Andre and we went out and we met this whole random group of people and you know, he's like, I don't remember anyone's name. And I was like, boom, 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 boom. Like 6-7 people in a row, I got their names just like that.
Yeah.
And we had a couple vodkas, but that didn't affect me because I was present and focused on every person that I met.
Yeah.
So.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to do this, man.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a long time
awesome.
Coming.
Yeah,
it's,
definitely.
It's the building up to this.
It's many years
awesome,
in the making.
Man.
So thank you.
Well, that's a wrap, everybody. You can find all the relevant links right in the show notes. Check out Making Waves Podcast for more information. And to watch video versions of the podcast, find us on YouTube. Don't be a stranger. Reach out on social media. Let me know who you'd like to hear on the show or just say hi. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, please tell someone you know and help spread the wave. Making Waves Podcast is produced by The Blue Wave, a media and production company and digital agency. That's thebluewave.net. So for now, thanks for listening, have a great day, and go make some waves.